Chapter 73. As winter slowly faded in Caliris, Dorian arrayed his army on the plain north of the city to face the invaders from the Frieze. The ground was still covered in melting snow that their feet churned into freezing slush. Every breath steamed a protest against battle in such conditions. The wild men who inhabited the Frieze always fought bravely, but their only tactic was to overwhelm a foe by throwing a larger army at it. Once engaged, they fought man to man, never as a unit. Since its founding, Caliris had never been taken by the brutes, though a few times it had been a near thing. Gareth had always said that the wild men had proportionally more talented men and women than any people in the world. The armies faced each other as the sky turned from inky blue to ice blue with the rising sun. God King Wanhope's lines were only 3 deep, arrayed over as much of the plain as 20,000 men would stretch. The wild men's army dwarfed his and stretched much further and more thickly. There was no way Wanhope could keep them from flanking his army. In the middle of the wild men's line, there was one huge block that the men shunned. If Dorian's reports were correct, he faced 28,000 Krull, and even more wild men. 3-1 odds. Dorian smiled, fearless. The current of prophecy was streaming past him, and he saw 1,000 deaths, 10,000.
"Milord, are you feeling well?" Janine asked.
Dorian hadn't wanted her to have to see this, but he'd been counting on Janine more and more, not only for her advice, either. He blinked and focused on her. Her features were splitting off so sharply that he could barely see her as she was now. Pretty, lips pale from the cold, bundled in furs. Flickering in front of her was a woman hugely pregnant with twins, and a woman with a crushed skull, features unrecognizable under the gore.
"No, not well at all," Dorian said, "but well enough that I won't let my men die."
From this distance, the grotesque features of the Krull weren't visible, though their plainly naked gray flesh was. That nakedness gave Dorian hope. The Krull were created with magic, but they were creatures of flesh. The cold would cripple and kill them eventually. It wasn't easy to force the Krull to wear clothing, as it wasn't easy to rein them in from slaughter, but each could be done. That the wild men's shamans hadn't meant their control was tenuous. Dorian gave an order, and the slaves lowered his palanquin to the ground. God King Wanhope stepped out and advanced onto the plain alone. Palming an obsidian knife, he shrugged off the priceless ermine cloak and let it fall to the mud. It was a gesture that would have infuriated him had he seen his father do it. Now, he understood. To protect what he loved, he had to keep control. To keep control, Wanhope had to be a god. A god was above ordinary concerns like ruining a cloak that cost more than 50 slaves. The currents of prophecy were rising at the pressure of 70,000 futures that Wanhope held in his hands. On his choices, tens of thousands would live and die. He looked at the army opposing him and saw 10,000 ravens swirling over them, waiting to feed. He blinked, and the ravens were gone. Then blinked again, and they were back. But they weren't ravens. Nor did they only swirl over the wild men. Dorian turned, eyes wide. Wispy dark figures swarmed over his entire army, clotted the air above his men, darting this way and that. Here, six perched on a single man, their claws sunk deep into his flesh. There, only a single dark figure spun around another warrior, stabbing in one place, and then another, as if trying his defenses. But those were the exception. Almost every man in Dorian's army had at least one figure clinging to him. And there were ranks among them. Some were far more terrible. Dorian looked at General Naga nearby. A trio of the monsters clung to the man, two perched on his shoulders, one licking ephemeral blood from the general's fingers. This close, Dorian could see their features. One had a cancer that swelled one eye grotesquely. Open, suppurating ulcers dotted their golden-skinned faces, dribbling black blood onto robes so black with that blood that Dorian could barely tell that they had once been white. It was those shredded robes, dripping ephemeral blood, that made them all look like ravens. The cancered one dipped his claws into General Naga's skull and drew them out again and licked its claws greedily. But they weren't claws. They were finger bones, denuded of their golden flesh. It turned its good eye to Dorian.
"What is he looking at?"
it asked. The other cocked its head, and it met Dorian's gaze.
"Us!"
it hissed in wonder.
"Ordnair, Royeo, get near Fignem, Dirlom."
Dorian heard the voice. It was Janine, but he couldn't understand what she was saying. Why couldn't he understand her? But he could understand these things. What were they, anyway? He looked back to the army across the plain. He saw the Krull, but this time he saw through their flesh. Each of them held one of these creatures.
"My God, these are the strangers."
Dorian saw them, and he understood. The strangers carried hell with them wherever they went. They fed on human suffering not because it sustained them, but because it was a distraction from their own suffering. It was entertainment. Wearing flesh was no escape. Rather, it was simply the best distraction of all, a chance to feel, if only for a time, to experience the pleasures of food and drink, if only in a muted way, and to kill. That was the pinnacle, to take away that which men had, and which they had no more.
"Ordnair."
The voice was in his ear. Dorian turned, and for a moment he could see with his natural vision once more. Every one of his men was staring at him, fearful. Then his vision bifurcated, and he could see fear rise like a fragrance from his men to the delight of the swirling strangers. He felt the fingers on his shoulders, bony fingers. But before he could turn to face what he knew must cling even to him, he felt natural fingers grab his bicep and squeeze hard. Janine swam into his vision, which was natural once more. Then it split. She was pregnant, right now, but not with twins. A stranger spun in tight circles around her, but hadn't yet found a place to rest. It wanted... by the god! It wanted their baby! Dorian cried out and saw a fresh wave of fear rise from his men. A mob of the strangers, now aware of his awareness of them, had congregated around him. They were walling him in.
"Ordnair! Rodnia! Adimt! Dornia! Dorian!"
Janine was whispering fiercely in his ear, her body pressed against him, turning him away from his men. He blinked and saw only ground and soldiers and Krull and his wife. She'd called him back from madness, maybe using the thing which best anchored him to reality. His own name.
"I'm back,"
he said.
"I'm here. Thank you."
He shook himself, willed himself not to see beyond the veil again. He looked over his shoulder, nodded to General Naga to let the frightened men see that Dorian was well, and then strode forward. Beneath the cloak, Dorian, Wanhope, had decided to go bare-chested. A god felt not the cold. He strode forward, decisive to cover for his earlier hesitation. Great knots of veer rising in his skin, he gestured, and a young man was brought forward.
Damn it.
Wanhope hadn't wanted Janine to see this, but it was too late, and there was no way she would go where she couldn't see him after he'd almost doomed them all by standing around looking lost. The young man's name was Udric Ursul. All of the Ethlings in Caliris had been killed, but 17 who'd already left for their harrowings still lived. Udric had impregnated the wrong Modaini oligarch's daughter and had to flee, thus failing his Urdtan. He'd come home to beg mercy.
"Do you know, Udric?
If you raise 13 legions of Krull, you can command them yourself. But if you raise just one more, you have to master an Arkhangul." "A what?" Udric's brows were still heavily cold, menacing despite his fright.
"It's a creature that these wild men didn't dare try to master,"
Wanhope said.
"Tell me, brother, is it better for one man to die, or the whole people?"
Udric's eyes widened, and then widened again as Wanhope cut his throat with the obsidian knife. He dropped to his knees, throat spurting, then tumbled awkwardly on his back. Dorian felt, or imagined, the jubilation of 1,000 strangers. He blinked.
"Control, Dorian. Control it."
He didn't dare to watch what this next part looked like from that other reality. Wanhope extended his arms and his wings toward the host before him.
"Arkhangulus, come, be known to me."
The weaves spun out from him easily, as if the veer itself was helping him, as if he'd done this 1,000 times. Green lightning danced around him, a train of blue fire looped around him. Then the ground began to boil around Udric's corpse. Clumps of dirt burst and stuck to the body. Flares danced over Udric, and the corpse's muscles tore, skin ripped. The shamans saw their mistake. They hadn't dared raise an Arkhangulus, and Dorian had. An Auroch's horn bugle called the wild men to charge, but only half did. A bolt of lightning cracked the earth before Wanhope, blinding him, and thunder zipped over him and over both armies, dropping men to the ground on both sides. When Wanhope's vision returned, the wild men's charge had faltered and broken. There was a man standing where Udric had been, and every eye was on him. He was easily 7 feet tall, with hair of molten gold falling to the nape of his neck. Though his skin was the color of polished silver, it wasn't shiny or artificial. His eyes were an arresting emerald of a shade barely within human possibility. Perhaps one man in a million had such eyes. Perhaps mimicking Wanhope, he too was bare-chested, though his body was lean and angular. He was the most beautiful man Wanhope had ever seen. The Arkhangulus laughed, and even his laughter was beautiful.
"We're strangers, God King, not monsters."
"What is your name?" Wanhope asked.
"I am Baelzebane,
the Lord of Serpents. Awfully cold in the freeze for a snake.
I'm not in the freeze any more, am I?
I would have you serve me, Baal-zebane, One Hope said. He desperately wanted to look at Baal-zebane as he was, but he didn't dare. If he lost himself to madness now, Baal-zebane might take Dorian's body instead of Udric's. The stranger chuckled.
And I would have the sun and moon bow down to me.
But one of these things will happen. Baal-zebane laughed, as if at a precocious child.
I am stronger than you.
It is only the will and the call that matters. I have called you, and my will is implacable. The stunning green eyes locked on to his, and Dorian had only to think of how Janine would be taken if he didn't compel this snake. He felt the Archongulus's will rise against him, higher and higher. Baal-zebane was ever so much more than this body before Dorian. He was immortal, omnipotent. There was nothing Dorian could do to stop him. It was hopeless. He should bow and beg for mercy. Dorian knew this was the Archongulus's attack, and he held on to what he knew. The Archongulus would obey, would bow, would serve.
I am God King. I am implacable. I will destroy those who challenge me. I will not serve. I am a god.
Baal-zebane relaxed, and the attack stopped.
Very well, God King. I will serve you.
Where is my half-brother Muburu?
He attempted to take over the 10 tribes. He failed. Only 1 tribe joined him, but he did take enough bones to raise a legion of Krull. He's heading for Black Barrow.
A legion was about 2,000 Krull. It wasn't good, but it was far better than facing Muburu at the head of this army.
But it isn't Muburu you have to worry about.
Neff, Dorian said, his suspicions confirmed.
Yes, Neff is the one who taught the wild men to raise Krull. All this was nothing more than a diversion to keep any Orsul away from Black Barrow.
What's he trying?
To make himself God King, whether by raising a titan or by giving Kali flesh.
Surely Neff didn't mean to raise Kali herself. It would be madness. If what Dorian had seen of the stranger's nature was true, giving their leader flesh would be inviting the devastation of all Midcryu. The good news was that no one since Roygaris or Sul had been powerful enough to raise Kali. A titan, on the other hand, was far more probable, and plenty frightening enough. Where in the stranger's hierarchy did a titan fall? 2 ranks above Baal-zebane? 3?
By the god.
But all this was a conversation for another time. To claim the wild men's Krull, we must strike down the shaman who controls them, correct? One Hope asked. Who is it? Baal-zebane pointed to a wild man, covered completely in Wad tattoos. The man had dozens of shields surrounding him, both his own and other magi's. But as Baal-zebane gestured, the shields simply melted away. One Hope threw a single green fiery missile at the man. The mage watched it contemptuously, secure in his shields. And it burned a hole in his chest. He died with a shocked look on his face. Baal-zebane smiled, and Dorian noticed something strange in how the skin crinkled at the corners of his eyes. The Archongul's skin was made of thousands of tiny scales.
Master, Baal-zebane said, what would you have the fallen do?
Kill the wild men. No feeding until nightfall. And then load the bones onto the wagons. We may need them to make more Krull at Black Barrow.
As you desire.
Baalzebane bowed. By the time he straightened, panicked cries were already rising from the wild men's army, as the Krull in their own ranks turned on them.